You know, the truth is, you're scared shitless of going to that place, aren't you?
I am not.
Yes, you are. And you're using me as an excuse not to go.
Get out.
Just gonna piss it all away, Alex. Don't you understand? When you give up your dream, you die.
Hello and welcome to 80s Movie Montage. This is Derek.
And this is Anna.
And that was Nick Hurley telling Alexandra Owens she better go to that fucking audition in, of course, 1983's Flashdance.
What's with the formality of the full names, just so everybody knows?
I just think the movie of Flashdance's stature demands it.
Demands full names.
Yes.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
Flashdance!
Yeah.
I'm very excited to cover this one.
What a wild experience that was, especially that one scene.
The one scene.
Where it was like an extended 5-minute strobe
light session. Oh, sure. Especially for you.
Yes.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're right. There actually should be some kind of warning ahead of the film.
I think maybe there would be like a light sensitivity warning for things now, but I'm pretty confident that 1983...
Oh, sure.
No, definitely not.
In 1983, never would be.
Theaters were just seasoned out in droves during that
scene. 40 years on,
yeah.
Like, you get that all the time in TV shows where it would give you a warning like that.
Yeah, because it's like a 5-second blip of light, and you're like, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah, but that was, you're absolutely right.
That was crazy.
That was pretty extended. That was pretty egregious. So Flashdance.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of like that scene. Although Flashdance is a real type of dancing. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
I thought they kind of like made up the word for the movie. But in any case.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like I was saying, I am really excited to cover this one. This one falls into that wheelhouse of films that we've covered before where it's about somebody who's like really trying to go after a dream.
Big theme of the 80s.
Big theme of the 80s.
Go after your dream, and if you don't, you're dead.
As Nick, what's his name?
Yeah, that's
yeah. What as Nick said,
he always dreamed of owning a construction business or a steel.
You know, that is really interesting.
Welding
yeah,
place.
When they have that conversation about him going after what he wants, I'm like, so your dream was to like
steel.
Maybe his dream was to become independently wealthy, which is what he seemed to have achieved.
Yeah.
But with films like Fame and A Chorus Line, this is like right in that wheelhouse.
Very much so. Yeah.
And I always find these films really interesting. Because of like what they say and
or cocktail.
Yeah. No, that's although his dream was like more just like money, right? He just wanted money.
Don't let your dreams be dreams.
Yeah. So in any case, written by where we normally start.
Yeah.
So we have two gentlemen, one who is quite infamous for the types of screenplays that he went on to write throughout his career.
Okay.
But I'm going to start with Thomas Headley Jr. So he has both a story and screenplay by credit for this particular film. And overall, he doesn't have a huge filmography. In total, he has 6 writing credits. This is one of them.
All right.
So because of the brevity of this particular filmography, I just wrote down everything, and they're all films.
Okay.
I don't know if I really know any of the others, but we have Mr. Patman.
Mr. Juneau?
Not Pac-Man, but Patman.
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 Double Negative.
Okay.
Obsession.
Positive.
Yes. Otherwise known as Positive. Not really, but Obsession.
The Fragrance.
Fighting Back, and Hard to Hold.
Okay, I am not familiar with any of these films.
I am not either.
Yeah.
However, that's Mr. Headley Jr. Now, moving on to Joe Esterhaus.
Is it
Haas House? I've heard his name a million times, but I don't know if I've ever actually said it out loud. So he is very well known in... I don't know what you would say, the Hollywood community. Like, he has a reputation about him.
He does. Okay.
Yeah.
What is that reputation?
Well, I'm going to read off to you some of his more well-known screenplays. And also, he is one of those gentlemen who, like, way back in the heyday of, like, I'm going to say, like, late 80s, early 90s, when you would have these, like, crazy bidding wars on scripts, he is one of the guys who definitely got that kind of windfall where he was getting paid big bucks for, and I think, okay, so I'm a little fuzzy on the details, but I know that there wasn't like a thing between him and Shane Black, but Shane Black is another screenwriter who also got big paydays back in the day.
Shane Black from Predator?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I know that at some point, I think Esther House was like annoyed because at some point Black got a payday for a script where that payout like superseded what Esther House had gotten up to that point. So he felt like... like, he wanted that acclaim of having gotten the most.
I'm going to say, with all due respect,
sure,
he can fuck off, because that's like the number of people that we know that would struggle just to get anything made.
Yes.
So for him to be any particular way about just not being like, that's Aaron Rodgers.
But it was a different time.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And I'm not trying to defend the guy. I don't really have anything for him. But okay, here we go.
I don't want to offend him. So please, Mr. Restaurant, if you're listening to this right now, please note that I did say with all due respect.
So if you want to get more into his career, because as you'll hear in a second, he has a very specific kind of niche of screenplays that he writes for the most part. So one of my favorite podcasts is You Must Remember This.
Yeah.
And most recently, she did like kind of a two-part season, and it was like basically kind of like erotic thriller type films from the 80s and 90s. So this is like me kind of cluing you in.
People
to the type
love those erotic thrillers.
Yeah. Which were really big at a certain point in time, and he is brought up often throughout the course of her podcast.
Okay.
So he wrote Jagged Edge. Mm. So probably his most famous is that he wrote Basic Instinct.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there was a Basic Instinct 2. I don't know how involved he was, but because he created the characters, he gets a credit for it.
Really? I didn't. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's come up before.
Basic Instinct 2?
Well, like, if you originated characters in a screenplay,
you
often get grandfathered into a credit.
I just don't think I realized there had been a sequel.
Mm, yeah, and did they bring Sharon Stone? I don't even remember. But he also wrote, so another Sharon Stone film, Sliver.
Okay, another erotic, is that?
That's like her and, not Alec Baldwin, but another Baldwin brother.
Billy?
Billy, yeah, I think so.
There's a Billy Baldwin.
Yeah, so, and I think there's like kind of an infamous thing there where like, I don't know, the director basically maybe outright told Sharon Stone, you should sleep with Baldwin to get that chemistry going between you. And she's like, or I could just act and he could just act, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
Maybe a strong actor at that
actually,
point in time?
It's not Billy, it's William. William, my
apologies. Oh, my apologies.
Apologies. So sorry.
So there's like that story floating around. I think that's also brought up in You Must Remember This.
What an awful suggestion.
Oh, yeah. the audacity. Anyway, he also wrote, infamously, Showgirls.
The famous erotic thriller.
So here you go. Like,
wait,
now
was
you're
it?
Getting...
Was, is show, is there...
I don't know if I'd call it like a thriller, but like, I guess definitely erotic.
Let's just say the intent was
the intent,
to make it
maybe
a certain way.
Jade. So right in that wheelhouse again.
I mean, just from the key art, that would appear to be an erotic thriller.
I've seen Jade.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a while, but I know I've seen it. And then lastly, I have The Impact. I don't know that film. That might be outside of what he's known for. I'm not sure. But that is Joe Esterhaus. So interesting that he wrote this film, because this precedes all the ones that he maybe became most well known for. And I think you see, so to speak, a sliver of where he's going to go, because he definitely puts an emphasis, and obviously other people have to also bring this to life, namely the director, cinematographer, in terms of like the way that they portray Alex. Like, you have a lot of tight cuts on her body, or the person who stood in for her.
Unlike all of the dancers'
body.
Like,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's and I'm not saying this necessarily.
Even when they went to go exercise, they're fucking gym.
Well, it's a music video. And that's a big part of what made this film so popular, is the highlight of MTV.
Yeah.
And
it feels very much like influenced by that like way of watching stuff. Because even when they went to go work out.
Intentionally so.
And it's like every wall is just like this intense bright white light backlighting them.
Absolutely.
While they just used like weird workout machines.
Absolutely. No, all very intentional, all very kind of hyper-sexualized.
Yeah.
So in any case, okay, so right along that line, moving on to the director, Adrian Lin, he also is brought up quite a bit in that other podcast. So if you want to learn more about him, he is, and actually, you know what? Well, no, I'll get to it when I get to it. This is an Oscar-nominated and Oscar-winning film.
Okay.
He didn't get nominated for this particular film, but it just brought to mind, because he is an Oscar-nominated director just in general. And he also kind of has a very similar niche as Esther House in terms of, like, what he gravitates towards. Mm. And I think I read that so I think up to this point, we have not done a Brian De Palma film.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't think we have. They have somewhat similar sensibilities, and I know that they've been up for the same films before. And
that wasn't Untouchables.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
And that's like, and that's so funny that that's the one film of his that we've done, because yeah. That's like kind of outside of what he's also known for.
Okay. I thought so, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for that. But yeah, we certainly could do way more De Palma films. But I think De Palma might have been offered this film before Lin, and he turned it down. Because, yeah, there's just a sensibility that they both have. As far as Lin's career is concerned, so early on, he did a film called Foxes. One of two, well, three, four infamous films that he's done. So he directed 9 1/2 Weeks.
Okay.
So I don't know if we'll ever get to that film.
I don't know anything about it.
Oh, that's the one with Kim Basinger and Basinger?
Basinger?
Basinger. Obviously a very well-known actress.
Yeah, I just never
heard her name. And Mickey Rourke.
Okay.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Is it an erotic thriller?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I mean, okay, look, I'm going to be really honest. I've never seen the entire film. Maybe I've seen bits and pieces, but it's like this relationship between the two of them.
How long does it last?
And in any case, now for sure we're gonna do this film. I would be very interested in doing this movie. Lin is also the director on Fatal Attraction.
Okay.
And that is the film for which he got his single Oscar nomination.
All right.
And another super interesting film, a film, and I mean, I'm giving, like, I'm not trying to sway people away from our podcast, but if this is a genre of film that you're interested in, you must remember this covers all these movies, because they're really...
Tell them we sent you.
There really is an extended amount of time in the 80s and 90s where these films were very popular.
Yeah.
And Fatal Attraction in particular is such an interesting film because it isn't quite at least what Glenn Close thought she was signing up for. Because she looked at... And it's funny because that character's name is also Alex. She did not see herself as the villain in the film. Oh, and to be fair, it is super Michael Douglas gets off pretty scot-free in that film.
Does he?
Yes, he does.
He does?
Yes, he does. He gets to keep his family. He gets to keep his life. He doesn't get to keep his bunny, but he gets to keep everything else. And he walks away from that situation pretty much intact.
I have not seen...
And she ends up dead.
Well, then things certainly turn out worse for her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The death part, for sure.
Yeah.
But to say he gets off easy...
He does!
It feels like there are some consequences.
Such as?
Such as, like, the... well, not just the bunny, of course. But, like, the attempted murder.
On him?
Doesn't she, like, go after him and or his wife?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she goes after the wife. I think she tries to kidnap... It's been really long time since I watched the movie. I think she tries to kidnap their kid.
Yeah.
But at the conclusion of that film...
So I haven't seen... Is it all just, like, wrap up nice and neat?
Yes, with a nice little bow.
Okay.
Because the bad woman that he slept with is dead.
I wonder to what extent there were, like, test audiences that were like, okay, but... We got this. We need this to, like, wrap up a little
bit
cleaner.
It's also very indicative of the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, the other woman and the, like, family man who just wanted to have a little fun for the weekend, didn't think his wife would ever find out.
Is the series any different?
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah, I wonder if they,
like, kind of... Is that the one with Pacey from... Dawson's Creek.
Oh, I think so. And yeah. also, I can't remember her name from Party Down.
Oh, no way. That's yeah. who,
that
okay.
is in the role that.
Okay, got yeah. it. All right. Well, we're not talking about that film.
Back to Flashback.
Back to Flashdance.
Oh, and did Adrian I say Le- Back to Flashback? I think I did.
Did you? Oh.
Back to Flashdance.
He also did. Well, I don't know if I'd say you like this film, but it, I think, made an impact on you. He directed Jacob's Ladder.
Yeah, that is, like, a super cool, creepy, kind of disturbing horror movie. Yeah,
yeah, and that's a little bit outside of his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
He did Indecent Proposal.
I'm not a fan of that concept, even. It's weird.
Indecent Proposal? Yeah. So, if, like, super rich dude. I wonder now how... $1 million, not that much.
Yeah, fuck off with that $1 million, man.
That's insulting.
Better add a B to that for yeah, us to even exactly. have a movie.
In 2024 money.
In this economy?
Yeah, exactly. He did Lolita. So, Unfaithful. And then more recently, Deepwater.
Okay.
So, okay. So,
how,
finally.
How is yeah. Unfaithful different from Fatal Attraction?
It's just it's not basically fatal? Swapping places. Oh. So, it's the wife that okay. has the affair.
Okay.
I've never seen it. I know just a tiny bit about it. Mm-hmm. But I think it almost plays out the exact same way.
Really?
Where
does it all turn out okay for her?
It turns out well. I'm gonna say they maybe have more of a broken marriage.
It's
at the
it's
end late, of it.
It's like 2002, so I'm sure they have like
it's
different...
Richard Gere and Diane Lane, okay. and then I'm so sorry, don't remember the name of the actor who plays her affair partner, but Richard Gere, I'm pretty sure kills him.
Well,
so it is like kind of like role swapping. In terms of what turns out. But I think the difference is that, like, what was implied to me at the end of Fatal Attraction is that Michael Douglas's wife is going to forgive him. They're going to continue on. Mm-hmm. They're going to have their mm-hmm. family. It'll get repaired. I don't think the same kind of closure was given at the end of Unfaithful.
Okay.
Is my not super well-informed perspective on it.
Okay.
But, so... Okay, moving on to cinematography, for which this film was nominated.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You thought it was shot well?
I mean, they had a vision and they stuck to it.
I would say it's probably held up on the strength of the dance sequences.
Yeah, yeah.
The rest of it is pretty normal.
Like the dance sequence when they're like walking through town and it like just kind of yeah. like some of those things just kind of like mm-hmm. occurred out of nowhere were mm-hmm. like really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Apparently that policeman is like a real guy. I don't know if at this point he's still with us because
he still
looked...
like miming, grabbing his gun and shooting.
Yeah, I know. I know that didn't age well. But like his whole shtick was like kind of being this dancing traffic cop. So
that's
he
cool.
was, like, well-known in okay. the area. So cinematography, the guy who shot this is Donald Peterman. He did pass away. It's been a minute. He passed away in 2011. Mm. He, like I mentioned, he did get nominated. Not his only nomination.
And not the first time we've talked about him.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. So in his career, let's see. I have all films for him. He didn't actually probably certainly won't be the last time we talk about him.
Nope.
So we brought this up. Was it just our previous film, When a Stranger Calls? It like came up a couple times in
so.
Terms of
calls
like
are coming from inside the room.
Yeah, yeah, inside the room. they're in the same room as yeah. you.
Not even paying attention. They're right behind you.
They're right behind you. So he shot When a Stranger Calls, Young Doctors in Love. So you just said not the first time we brought him up. We spoke about him when we covered Splash, mm-hmm. one of my favorite films.
Yep.
And that was a couple seasons ago with Kelsey, but we highly encourage you to check that one out. That was a really fun episode. He shot Cocoon, Gung-Ho. I don't know if we'll ever... do this. Is this still 80s? You know better than I do. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. It is, right?
I believe it is. And
he got another yeah. cinematography Oscar nomination for that.
Yeah, I think The Voyage Home is the one where they have to save the whales.
Save the whales.
Literally.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that one, I think I enjoyed that one more than 3, Search for Spock.
Okay.
But also, he was the director of photography for American Flyers.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I skip over that one?
The cycling movie that we're going to definitely have to cover someday.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. No, that's fair. I know that
With,
would
I think,
be...
Dennis Quaid?
That would be interesting to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so many others.
And so many others. He might come up again later this year, because I would really love to finally do Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I would too. Yeah, it's
and I feel like we have a very small window of when we should cover that. So it's always passed us by.
It's at times just such a frustrating movie to watch. Like
it is so removed from technology wise.
Literally nothing that happened to them would happen to them. Whatever happened.
Yeah. It wouldn't be a movie. So he shot Point Break. So now we're getting into the 90s.
Too bad.
Adam's Family Values, another one of my favorite films. He shot Get Shorty. That is a very well shot film.
Mm-hmm.
Men in Black.
It has to be. It's like so stylish.
Yeah, but in the best sense of that word. Mighty Joe Young. And then his final credit was How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
All right.
Okay, so moving on to music. So this is kind of an interesting, we've had this come up now a few times, where there's like a composer of a film, and sometimes this is the same person, and then even though there's like a score almost always for a film, some films, especially the films that we are covering in this particular decade with the rise of MTV, you get these like blockbuster soundtracks that come out of these movies.
It's like more of a mixtape coordinator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But this guy, he does both. So Giorgio, it's not Mordor.
Mordor?
No, it's not.
Oh my God.
Morodor.
Okay.
Morodor? Morodeer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's from the depths of Mordor.
So that's what it makes me think of. So yeah, he has his interest both goes towards composing, but also like, and he won an Oscar for this film. This was very similar to, I think, Fame, maybe a couple other films that we've covered where there were like multiple songs nominated.
Okay. I can guess the two.
So which one do you think won?
Gloria.
No.
Damn.
Not even nominated. But that might be my favorite of most of all the songs. I love that song.
Yeah. I just think of it as the Flashdance.
That's Laura Branigan. What a Feeling won.
Okay. That makes sense.
So he got Best Original Song for that one.
Did they just send the award to Baradur specifically?
And then what do you think was the other song nominated?
Well, I named the two that come top of mind for me. So I don't know. I literally am not sure what else.
So it's the other one? Maybe the first like really popular song that,
She's a Maniac.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. Good job. So, and I think that maybe covers all of the like nominations and wins. We got one more to go, but yeah. So those two songs, Flashdance, What a Feeling. That's like its entire title. So nominated in one, and then nominated was just Maniac.
Oh, it's just called Maniac? Okay.
Yeah. But Giorgio was part of the one that won. So
there was a lot of sweat during the Maniac song sequence. Like, what? Yeah. You gotta have to clean that whole place up because it's just going everywhere.
And this is also a gentleman who has gotten Oscar attention both in the categories of scoring and obviously songwriting. So he also won Best Original Song for Top Gun. And what song do you think that was?
Danger Zone?
No. That's Kenny Loggins.
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
Damn it. I can't think of it. It's on the tip
Take
of my
breath away.
That's it. Yeah.
By Berlin. Yeah. Okay. So he did that one. He scored, I just thought this was a funny title, Sex Life in a Convent. he won. So here we go. He did win Best Original Score for Midnight Express. He scored, which is like, if I'm remembering the film correctly, a real downer of a film.
It is about an American who is imprisoned for trying to smuggle hash out of Turkey.
That's it.
And is in prison for quite a while until he concocts a way to escape, and he does, but it is dark. Very, very, I can't stress how different it is from Midnight Run.
Right.
Which is a delightful comedy with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin.
It's maybe more along the lines of like Shawshank, since it's basically the same story.
Shawshank is kind of like something you'd see on the Disney Channel compared to
really?
Midnight Express.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like someone gets like body parts like eaten
oh,
off.
Oh, no, thank you. Yeah. No, thank you.
He bites a guy's tongue out of him.
Okay, no, thank you. Woo. Moving on, he scored American Gigolo, which we could cover at some point. Mm-hmm. The 1982 Cat People. Oh. He did Scarface, so that is a De Palma film.
Yeah.
He must have come up, although that was so early in us doing this. I'm not sure if we were covering the same categories. He scored The Neverending Story.
We probably did.
Call
to action.
Yeah.
And let us know if we
let us know. And of course, it was the first time we had one of our beloved friends, Mike, on the show. Mm-hmm. So go check that one out. That was certainly season one. That was so early.
Probably appears in that episode at the 50 minute
inside joke. He does Over the Top, which could be a fun one to cover at some point. And then this goes right along with like just the trajectory of his career. He's worked on a ton of music videos. Mm. So he's worked with Donna Summer, Blondie, Irene Cara, Berlin. Obvious. So those two are obvious. And he did work with Kenny Loggins.
Nice. So I knew it.
Okay, so moving on to film editing, we have two gentlemen that we have both talked about before who cut this film. This is interesting because I was mentioning to you when we watched the film, so editing did get an Oscar nomination. This film got an Oscar nomination for Best Film Editing.
Okay.
However, you know, at one point you said, I feel like I don't really know a lot about her.
We talked about that. Like
yeah.
The time, like the runtime of the movie. And you had mentioned to me that they actually, it was intended to be significantly longer.
Yeah.
Longer
over
runtime,
2 hours.
Which would have given, I'm assuming, the opportunity to know a little bit more about what's going on. Because it did feel like a little disjointed as far as the story and the pacing goes.
And that's why that's so interesting they got nominated for Best Editing.
Yes.
So it's like, I guess it worked out, but yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's a really tight film. And like, look, who was I just having this conversation with? Films nowadays, generally, I feel are too long.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their movies are crazy long now.
Crazy long. And I feel like there's kind of a nice middle ground to be achieved.
Yeah.
This comes in at a super tight, like an hour and 35.
Yeah.
They could have padded it a little bit. I personally, like, look, I think you'd get enough of Alex, although there are a lot of questions. It could be completely intentional that, like, we don't really know about her family life. Why is she an 18-year-old working? Like, yeah, girl's got to make a living, as she says, but she's 18 years old, and she, like, you would just be on the cusp, generally, of graduating high school.
Yeah.
So how has she already achieved the skill sets to be a fucking welder?
Oh, you know, I mean, don't underestimate the workshop courses available in high school.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is like, because that when we first started the film, so you, is it okay to say you weren't as familiar with the movie as I
It's fair to say that I had never seen it before.
Okay, so never. Yeah. So you came in cold.
Yeah.
And I said to you,
I've seen parts of it. I knew, like,
okay,
a little bit.
Sure. It's hard not to. And I said, oh, she's 18 years old. And you're like, oh, do they ever say that? They do.
They do, yeah.
And
Alex, you're 18 years old.
Yeah, and it's like, what has happened in her life that she is, like, and it seems like she has, like, for a while, it's not like she just, you know, left home or got kicked out of the house. Like, she has her own home. She has her own dog.
Yeah,
she has her job.
A pretty impressive place. You know, like many people in the 80s, they have like an entire warehouse converted into a pretty stylish and fashionable loft.
Yeah, and she does definitely have like kind of an innocence about her that kind of shows her youth. But at the same time, she's incredibly mature for her age and has... Like,
what I'm hearing is we need a Flashdance prequel.
Maybe. There were so many questions about, like, what is her background? And I do feel like it was really relevant. Like, sure, I get the whole, like, gist of the film is that she just really wants to be a dancer.
Yeah.
It's, like, her dream.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to have known more about her. In any case, film editing.
Well, they could have taken like 5 more minutes and given us one more confessional.
Something, yeah.
Just one more confessional where she shows up in the church and tells this priest basically like, here's all of the plot that we're having a difficult time conveying to the audience. So I'm going to tell you these things that are happening and then I'm just going to leave. I'm not going to say a thing.
I also thought it was interesting that like, yeah, she, you know, has some type of like faith or religion that's a component of her life.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought that was like an interesting dynamic of like a part of her character, which I don't know if that fit for me, but I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, so the two gentlemen, the first is Walt Mulconery.
Mm-hmm.
He's passed for a while. He passed in 2001. Among his credits, not a super long filmography to pull from, but we do have a couple notable films. Personal Best, I think technically that could slide it. I think that's super early 80s. We could do that.
Yeah.
But Karate Kid.
Exactly. Yes.
So he edited on that. That certainly was season one. Might have been even, I think, our very first guest with Jason.
You know what? We got two. We got two episodes of The Karate Kid because we have the episode with Jason where we primarily just talk through the movie like we did way back then.
Yep.
But then we also have the second one.
Uh-huh. Our bonus. Our one and only bonus episode.
That's right.
Yeah.
Check it out. It was speaking of editing, let me tell you, that one was a true labor of love.
He did The Nut House, N-U-T-T, and...
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
And Manhattan Merengue.
Okay.
Exclamation point. So moving on to Bud S. Smith. So these two shared the nomination for this film.
He was as Bud Smith, however. He dropped the middle initial S.
Well, or you could say he didn't drop it. He eventually added it.
Holy shit. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So saying that at the time it was just Bud Smith?
Yeah.
Yeah. So at some, like if right
now.
At some
point he became distinguished.
Exactly. Yeah. And it appears to me that these two sometimes would pull double duty and edit a film together. And they also worked on their own projects.
Okay.
So because he also was the editor on Personal Best and he also was the editor on The Karate Kid. And this isn't even the second time we've brought him up because he also was the editor on Some Kind of Wonderful, which we've covered.
All I care about is me, my drums, and you.
I love that line. Yeah. I love that film, so go check that one out. He did Gross Anatomy, Dark Man.
That's a good movie. Yeah.
Don't know it, but I think you have mentioned that to me before. The Replacements and his last credit. He's still with us, but I think he is retired because I think he's like in his 90s at this point, maybe. The Game of Their Lives is his last credit.
And there's one that I need to bring up that we'll never be able to cover because it's from 1977.
Okay.
But it is with Roy Scheider from Jaws, and it's a movie called Sorcerer, which has nothing to do with magic or sorcery.
Is that was the one name that you've shown me?
That's the name of the big truck that
yes.
these different teams in the South American country are using to transport dynamite to where there's like this fire. They're trying to get the fire put out. It has some insane moments when they're getting one of these trucks over a really rickety bridge over a river. I definitely recommend that movie.
Like that movie.
If you can find it, like the only version I found was in French.
He was so good.
It wasn't great.
I wish there were more films we could cover with him.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're at the stars of our film. And of course, I mean, breakout role for her, Jennifer Beals.
Mm-hmm.
She plays her full name, Alexandra Owens. But she goes by Alex.
She does. Yeah.
And I think this was mentioned off camera, but like before we start recording.
Mic.
There is a significant age difference between her and not just in the world of the film, but in actuality.
It's referenced very ever so briefly in
the
actual
movie.
It's kind of
a joke more than anything.
I mean, she's more, her character is balking more at the idea of dating a boss than dating someone significantly older than
her. He's literally twice her age.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually worse when you say it that just flat out like that. Yeah.
Literally twice her age.
Yeah.
And yeah, so Jennifer Beals, I mean, at the time that, because I think she was born like 63, 83. So she was very close to the age of the character that she was portraying.
Okay.
Pending like when it was in production.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, she's great. She's great in this film. She is very easy to like, very easy to root for.
That's saying a lot since she kind of goes crazy at a few moments in the film.
She does. I mean, I think it also portrays like her youth. And this is not to excuse, there's never an excuse for violence. And I don't like that about her character, but I think that's also intentional that she's not this like perfect person.
Yeah. The moment before the podcast began,
Yeah.
Where they're having that conversation about her being too afraid to go to the audition. She slaps him like, slap. And he just like looks at her, slap. Keeps on looking at her. Slaps again so hard that she almost like breaks the window blind.
Yeah. It's definitely something that I also feel was like part of that time.
She
where
is
like,
slapping the shit out of this
guy. It was
guy.
Like more okay to let out your frustration or anger through physical violence. I don't think you see that as much in terms of like she's still the protagonist of this film.
Yeah.
But she has this aspect to her personality. Whereas if you saw someone do that in a film today, I think it would be like, oh, they're the villain. Which I'm not saying that's wrong. Again, I don't condone violence. But it was more accepted, I think.
I think you're right that it had as much to do with any of that as just like her character's immaturity.
Yeah.
As far as like that relationship. But, you know.
Anyway,
she slapped the crap out of him.
Yeah, and she is very volatile. She does not know how to, like, lock in her emotion when she gets upset.
She rode her bike yeah. to his house to throw a brick yeah. through a window.
Which could legitimately kill someone.
Well, I mean, they were fine. It did cost, like, $200, and it was
$170.
Was it $170?
$170. Okay. and... Yeah, that is something where, like, she goes from 0 to 60 multiple times throughout this film. But she does, you know, she really cares about her friends. And she has this, like, really lovely relationship with Hannah.
Yeah.
And so I do think that's an interesting depiction. As short as this film is and in as little background as we get on her, I do think you get a good sense of who she is.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate that she is not an entirely, like, perfect female protagonist. Like, there are aspects of her, to her, that like she's gonna need to work on that anger issue, you know, and things like that. So
just take all the anger and put it into the dance.
Yeah. So as far as Beale's career goes, I have a mix of film and television, a lot of projects that are well known. So she was in, this is much earlier in her career, My Bodyguard, Devil in a Blue Dress, Four Rooms, The Last Days of Disco.
Okay.
And so I will pull in a TV movie if I think that the title is fun. She was in a TV movie called They Shoot Divas, Don't They? Which I guess is like a ripoff. They Shoot Horses, Don't They?
Oh my God, that.
Yeah, exactly.
title that won't go away.
The Grudge 2. Now, if you're more, let's say, of a TV person, probably the show you know her most from is The L Word.
Hmm.
So the original, okay. But she does come back for like kind of the reboot. She's in the film The Book of Eli, a lot more TV work. She was in The Chicago Code, a show called Lauren, Proof, the TV series Taken.
Okay.
Also, the miniseries of The Book of Boba Fett.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then more recently, as mentioned, there was kind of like a reboot of The L Word. So she's also part of The L Word Generation Q.
Okay. She was also in The Prophecy 2 with Christopher Walken, which I don't think was quite as good as the original Prophecy with Viggo Mortensen as Satan, but
oh,
still,
sure.
Still fun watches.
Okay. So moving on to her love interest, Nick Hurley, played by Michael Norrie. And he's still totally working, very busy guy.
He's very much a doppelganger of, what is his name from Fright Night?
Yeah, he does definitely share a resemblance to Chris Sarandon.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have that look about them. As far as his credits go, I mean, well, before I even get into that, I mean, do you feel, I saw, like, who's, was it Siskel who said that, overall, he liked the film, but he thought that the relationship between them was, like, very wooden. Do you get a sense of why Alex would like him? Do you think, like...
I actually don't. I don't get it. I think, like, your boss finding out that you were dancing at some bar and then, like, putting the moves on you, I don't feel like it would go this way.
Yeah. I mean, also to keep in mind, it's 83.
Yeah.
So, kind of...
I mean, he's not an unattractive guy. He obviously has money. He's driving around in a Porsche. I don't know. I don't know if those
factor in at all. He does seem to legit care about her.
He does.
Of course, he's, like, physically attracted to her.
I mean, his divorce, I suppose, played some role in why he, Like his character was pursuing, like, this is my dream. Like he was like, my dream has always been to hook up with someone half my age who works for me. Maybe that was just his dream. I don't know.
Yeah. And I feel like they are kind of, even for like the 80s, at this point, it is really hard to separate out like how I would view this through a 2024 lens. But it does seem like they're pushing the envelope, which is right on brand for both the screenwriter and director in terms of, they are very clear that they have a highly sexual relationship.
Yeah.
And she's 18 years old. Yeah,
that's it. Like the attraction is really the only thing that, like, I don't really see any other reasons why they would necessarily, like.
I mean, they try to have conversations with each other, you know, like when they're in bed, she does ask him about like, well, you loved her once. And then that brings them into like what you were just saying in terms of like, why did they divorce? What has he done with his life? And he definitely supports her. Like, I mean, he's not trying to keep her a welder for the rest of her life. Like,
no, he's not a bad guy. He's trying to like help her out and use the influence that he has to at least get her the audition.
It just is still a little bit of like a hurdle I can't quite get over in terms of them just being together, period. But
I mean, I believe it only because I'm watching a movie where they're like telling me I should believe it.
I don't necessarily agree with Siskel in terms of like the relationship being wooden. It's just hard for me to connect the dots in terms of like, it just makes it's a little icky. It's a little icky.
Yeah. So. I would agree. I think it's if it's got one of those two things going on, it's probably a little bit more of the ick for me than it is wooden, because he seems like I thought his performance, as far as like that actor's performance, he did fine. Like, you know,
And his character does ground her.
Yeah.
Like there were plenty of times where he could have been like, fuck this, you know, with like how like, again, volatile she becomes with him.
But I'd expect him to act more mature because he's her age.
He's twice her age. And I think as much as like I do like his character, but then as soon as I'm reminded, oh, but he's dating an 18-year-old who's also his employee, I'm like,
man.
Yeah.
Hard. It keeps on coming back to that,
it's
huh?
It's hard to think of him as a good guy when like facts are facts and those are the facts.
Bad facts.
Okay, so Michael Nouri, among his other work, a lot of, like, I do have some films, but a lot of TV work. So he worked on Beacon Hill, Search for Tomorrow, a film called Gangster Wars.
Okay.
Oh, and this is why I brought it in. So he worked on a film called Gangster Wars and then reprised that role for a TV miniseries called The Gangster Chronicles.
The Gangster Chronicles, okay.
Yeah. He was on the show Downtown. So there was a 1990 Captain America.
Oh.
I clicked in. Man.
Does it look bad?
Woo! It looks bad. Yeah. But he was, and it is the same story. It is the Marvel story. So,
sure, yeah.
So he's in that. A TV show called Love and War. The film Finding Forrester. I think that's Sean Connery. He's done a lot of like soap opera work. So for a time, he was on the Young and the Restless. He also did All My Children. And also, like, kind of primetime soap opera work. He was on The OC. And I think Damages was also one of those shows. He was in the film Last Holiday. I don't know if we watched this not that long ago. He's in the film The Proposal with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds. But I'm not sure who he is in it.
Yeah, I don't.
She might be his boss. Or he's her boss.
Uh-oh. Well, that, you know where it's going then.
Well, she doesn't propose to him. Oh. He's also much more recently on the show Yellowstone.
Okay.
And then this is just a fraction. Like, he's a very busy actor. So he's just also done a ton of TV appearances. Okay, moving on to, now I mentioned her by name. Alex has this friendship with this older woman, Hannah.
Yes.
Hannah Long is the character's name, played by Lilia Scala. Her first acting credit was in 1931.
Wow.
This role for her in this film came towards the end of her career. She has not been with us for a while. This was the fourth to her last credit. But some of her work, so I thought this was interesting. So there was a TV series back in the 50s called The Goldbergs. Which she was on.
Was it still just like making 80s parodies? Only be like 1880s?
Which isn't that kind of funny? Like, she was on a show in the 50s called The Goldbergs. The Goldbergs, as most people know it today, is a show that just, like, fucking pulls everything from the 80s
everything.
For fodder.
Everything.
It's, like, such lazy. Anyway. And we're doing an 80s movie. I just thought that was kind of a funny kind of way that all. Anyway, I'm sure the Goldbergs had a Flashdance episode.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
So she was on another TV show, Valiant Lady. She was an Oscar-nominated actress.
Okay.
So she got a Best Supporting Actress nomination for the film Lilies of the Field.
Hmm.
She did a couple more films, Charlie, Heartland. Her final credit was a film called Men of Respect. And then just throughout the course of her career, TV, lots of TV appearances. So, which she is was, like almost everybody.
She was born in 1896.
What?
Yeah. She was born on November 28th, 1896.
Well, that's so interesting because if she was born in 1896, she didn't have her first acting role until she was 35 years old.
Yeah. Which was.
Which is very old for, especially back then.
Back then, yeah. Yeah.
That is so crazy. Oh, that's such good information. Interesting. Okay. So moving on to, unfortunately, it's kind of a sad story here. So Sunny Johnson, so she plays Jeannie. So she is Alex's, like, buddy, close friend.
The friend that she basically saves from that creep's competing strip club, which is an actual
but, like,
strip club.
For real strip club. Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of, like,
the other place was
dance,
classy.
Dance, classy.
Classy burger place with dancing.
With dancing.
Yeah.
So, and she's also an ice skater in the film, and it's...
God, that was just gutting. That ice skating scene was rough.
That is where I think Esther House was at his strongest, because I think it's almost a little on the nose, but, like, I do think that that is a really interesting... You have two characters. She's the first of which... So you have multiple characters in this film who have these, like, artistic dreams. Alex is one, Jeannie is another, Richie is another... And it is heartbreaking to see Jeannie.
That's it for her. That was her dream was to be a, like, competitive ice skater, dancer, ice dancer. And that was it.
And you see her not be able to succeed in that regard and then where it takes her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Alex, so to speak, saves her.
For that night she did.
For that night she did.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, at the very top of our conversation, I brought up other films that we've covered that's, like, kind of similar, Chorus Line Fame, where really similar stuff happens, actually, mm-hmm. like Irene Cara in Fame. She is so desperate to – it's a little different because she's doing it, she thinks, to further this artistic career. Jeannie just gives up and is stripping just to kind of get by. But, like, Irene Cara also does kind of, like, a nude video thinking that it's, like, gonna be for acting purposes.
Yeah.
But it just shows you, like, how not achieving the thing that you dream about can kind of break you in different ways. And I think that that is a real strength of the film.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want people to think, like, you know, what Nick says, if you give up on your dream, you die. We've had these conversations about how true is that? Can you channel that artistic energy in another way?
There's a difference, though, between, like, I think Alex's character would be giving up because she's never given it the try that Jeannie's character
That's
has.
That's true.
Like, Jeannie saw it through as far as she could.
Yeah.
And she didn't, she never gave up. She just didn't make it. And there's a difference.
Yeah. So, Sunny Johnson, who played her, unfortunately passed away just a year after this film came out.
Oh my God.
From an aneurysm.
Hmm.
She's only 30 years old. So she passed away very, very young. She could have very well had a much longer acting career had not that happened. As far as what we do have for her, I have mostly film. So she was in the film Where the Buffalo Roam, Dr. Heckle and Mr. Hype.
Oh.
I think we could do this one, The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia. So that's with Mark Hamill and Christy McNichol and I want to say Dennis Quaid.
Okay.
I think that would be interesting because that was, like, right at the height of Hamill being part of the Star Wars trilogy and he was, like, trying to do other roles.
Oh, yeah, that would be interesting.
So it would be kind of interesting to cover that. And I really love Christy McNichol. And then she was also on the TV series Bay City Blues.
And one episode of Bosom Buddies.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that was Sunny Johnson. I'm glad she had this film because she's great in it.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to Richie Blazek.
Oh my God, this guy.
Yeah. I don't know if I really see the connection between him and Jeannie, but...
All the strays that Poland got with his jokes. What the...
Real cheap shots. So played by Kyle T. Hefner. So Richie is... oh my gosh, what was the name of the bar? Anyway, he's the cook.
Mosby's
or something like that.
We did watch the movie, I promise.
Yeah, we did watch the movie. So he's the cook who has aspirations to be a stand-up comedian. And he does get a couple shots.
He does.
The guy, we'll get to him too, but the guy who, Mosby's. Yeah, M-A-W-B-Y. Okay. So the guy who plays the owner of the bar does actually give it, he's kind of a grump. But he does give him a shot, and he's not good. Well, he redeems himself. Like, it starts off real rough, and then he makes some joke about putting cockroaches in people's burgers, and apparently they think that's very funny.
The crowd loved it,
and then he kills for the rest of his set.
Just moved on from there.
Yeah, so...
Until his gruff boss with a heart of gold said... No more cockroach jokes, okay?
No more cockroach jokes. He does leave town for L.A., but comes back.
What a mistake that was.
It was a real quick turnaround.
Well, him leaving played a pretty big role in, what's her name?
That's true, too.
Yeah.
It was like a ripple effect. However, you can't blame him for her making the choice to go to that other bar.
That's fair.
That was her choice. But he is very much a working actor up to this day. Some of his credits, he also was in Young Doctors in Love. He was in The Woman in Red. I don't know what character he plays in this, but he is in When Harry Met Sally.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm trying to place him. He was on the TV series Suddenly Susan. He does voice work. So one of his voice credits is for like a cartoon. Trollhunters, Tales of Arcadia.
Oh, yeah. That was a DreamWorks property.
Oh, that okay. One.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guillermo
del Toro.
Oh, okay.
Wait, yeah. That's one of his things. Yeah.
Lots of TV appearances. And yeah, just very much a very busy working actor up to this day. All right. So moving on to Johnny C. Johnny C is kind of the swarmy guy who...
Oh, he sure is.
He always, has like the toothpick in his mouth?
Constantly. That's how you know.
He tries to get both Jeannie and Alex to strip at his bar. Alex just unequivocally is like, no, not interested. You're a creep.
They're not strippers. They're dancers. And so they don't want any part of this.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're not strippers. They're dancers.
Because at his place, they are strippers.
At his place, they are strippers. And, you know, he... very much preys on Jeannie. Jeannie's age is never exactly given, I don't think, but she's probably around the same age as Alex.
Mm-hmm.
Once Jeannie has her disappointing, you know, whatever it was, a tryout or competition for the ice skating that doesn't work out, and Richie leaves, it's kind of like a 1-2 punch.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's in a very vulnerable position, and he is a predator who uses that opportunity to get her to come to the strip club.
Yep.
So that's who this guy is. And among his credits, there's one really notable one that, and also there's kind of an interesting tie-in. So he was in the film Nightmares. So he is Mr. Is it Body?
Yeah, it's Body because in like the Clue game, there would just be like a body.
Oh, right. Interesting. So he's in the movie Clue, which we have done.
That's right.
That's the first time Andy was on the show. Mm-hmm. So we encourage you to go check that one out. That was a great episode. He was on the TV series Fame.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought was interesting. I liked this title. So he is not in the film called Endless Summer.
Okay.
But he is in the film called Endless Bummer. Which I thought was really funny.
That's pretty good.
And then a film called Death Rider in the House of Vampires.
That sounds pretty fucking metal.
Sounds really intense, right? All right. So last on our list of actors, we have Ron Karabatos.
Karabatos.
Thank you. That's much better than I said. So he is the owner of Mobby. It's such a, why they picked this last name? Mobby?
Mobby.
Mobby.
It, Mobby.
I don't know why it feels weird to say that word, but
it's just Mobby.
He's Jake.
Yeah.
So he is the owner of the bar. And, you know, like I said, he's a little bit curmudgeonly, but it seems like he really does care for all the young adults that work there and everything.
It's his place. It's his bar. And during the infamous strobe dance scene. He's just like trying to cover
his
eyes.
That was very funny. Where he's like he's really good. He's like, oh, I don't like this at all. And
everyone
then also,
seems to be enjoying it, but I hate it.
And also, what was really funny is I think it's the first, like it opens the movie essentially after the welding scene, where Alex does her first dance, and it's like the infamous bucket of water.
Yeah, they go into that real quick. I expected that to be like further along in the movie, but that's like right at the get-go.
They make him, they move. And it's really funny because he's like sitting kind of in the front row. I think he's like just playing cards with friends, and he gets splashed. Yeah. He's like constantly annoyed by them, which I thought was very funny. So
flash dance, more like splash dance.
Oh my goodness.
We'll cut that out.
No, we're not. So he has been passed for a while. He passed in 2012. His first acting credit was at 48. Years old.
All right.
Not sure what his life was about before then, but he does have some really notable credits to his name. So he was in the film The Cotton Club. I have like a little bit of mix of film and television. So the TV series Dreams, more TV work, Our Family Honor, We Got It Made. He was in the film My Blue Heaven. Hmm. Here's a really fun credit, I think, for him. He is barely in it, but he has a really notable cameo in Get Shorty.
Oh, really?
So he's Momo. Momo is the gangster at the very, very beginning of the film where they have a surprise party for him. And this is the instigating incident, essentially.
Okay.
Where basically nobody, excuse me. Nobody can touch Chili Palmer while Momo is alive. They throw a surprise party for Momo. He has a heart attack on the spot when they say surprise.
Oh boy.
And so that's who Momo is.
Okay.
It's Ron. So he's in that. His final credit was Surviving Christmas. And yeah, throughout the course of his career, other TV appearances.
Ton of TV.
Yeah. So all right, here we go. Film synopsis.
What do we got? What could we possibly have?
An 18-year-old female amateur dancer who performs nightly at a dancing bar.
At a dancing bar.
And works as a welder during the day, dreams of joining the Pittsburgh Ballet School.
Yeah. No, that works.
Yeah. It sums it up. I think actually when you kind of frame it that way, it is interesting to me that her goal is to get into this school, because even though, I mean, who knows, maybe she'll shake things up there, but it doesn't seem like the kind of place, like what's that line? The kind of place that would accept me, I don't want to be a part of.
I can't remember. I know.
I think it was Groucho Marx who said that. Or I'm paraphrasing.
Sounds like something he would say.
A version of it.
Yeah.
And the scene where she first goes there to get an application, and she walks through this long hallway of all these very cookie cutter looking ballet dancers, which I'm not trying to take anything away from them because it is a notorious challenging art to go into.
Oh, it's
so hard. But they very deliberately are showing how different she is from all of them. But then when you also look at her dancing style,
the dancing style is what like kind of strikes me as like, do you want to do this?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like she'd be very constrained.
Yeah. I think she aspired. It's a kind of dance that she aspired towards, but because she lacked the formal training, like that's like why she wanted to get into the school to learn that. Like it's not what she does now, but it seemed like it was her dream or something that she wanted to become part of. So,
and I think that could probably overall, maybe the experience of going to that school could further her career, but I don't think she would enjoy it. Like, for instance, when she does that one move and Nick's like, oh, do that again. And she's like, I can't. Well, ballet school is all about repetition over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And maybe
I learned that from Flashdance. I mean, I learned that from Fame.
From Fame.
I mean, I learned that from, I don't know.
So, Chorus Line.
that was it.
Maybe she knows she needs to work on that, but I also just don't know if she's going to enjoy being there. I don't know.
Okay, well, look. So what you're telling me is we need a Flashdance sequel.
Yeah.
That tells us.
I think there maybe was talk about it, but it never happened. Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I look, this is also through a lens of back in 83, the conventional wisdom would be like, oh, no, you totally want to go to that school. That's where the prestige is.
Yeah.
That's, you know, how you're going to quote, unquote, make it if you want to be part of this world. I think nowadays there's much more acceptance of doing things in a non-traditional manner. Like, you don't have to follow
there
this
are,
one path.
Because there are just more, like, there are more ways to reach, like...
She could be a TikTok star.
Exactly. There, like, if you want to become a famous anything, there are just more ways to, like, reach the masses than there would be. And, look, that's totally fair. Sometimes... you have a dream, like, she's 18 years old. We've talked about her age possibly more than any other character in any movie we've ever covered. But, like, sometimes your dreams don't turn out the way that you think that they mm-hmm. would. So maybe that would be the case for her. Who knows?
It is so interesting because we've, not in the context of, I think, any film, but I feel like really recently you and I were just having a conversation about, like, kids today and how in some ways, kids today, yeah. But truly, like, in some ways, I went on at length about how Alex seems so grown up in mm-hmm. a lot of ways. Like, she has her own home and a job and a dog and all these things that I feel like would be wild today. And I am being very specific to kind of, like, American youth, but to think an 18-year-old today in today's America would have all those things seems kind of crazy. However...
Yeah. Yeah.
Kids today are also incredibly mature in other ways in terms of the way that they understand the world, how global the world is today, what they know of it, mm-hmm. access to information.
It's different.
It's just different.
Yeah.
But I understand, like, the sense I get from Alex, and again, this could have been interesting then to see more of her backstory. Like, she seems pretty blue collar. She works a blue collar job. It's like she doesn't feel good enough. I think she might have even said that at some point, that she just – she feels inadequate in comparison to –
Yeah, we don't – I mean, we understand that they share – that is one thing that they share, actually, is their background, because she's obviously, like, struggling, I guess. I don't – it seems like she's doing okay, but she's struggling to try to, like, achieve her dreams. And Nick, you know, I think he said that he was so poor he had hand-me-down lunches.
Oh, did he say that? I missed that.
Yeah, there is, like, some, like, shared experience or commonality between them in terms of, like, aspiring for something more.
Yeah.
And he achieved that, and she's still trying to. But, yeah, knowing we kind of have a little bit more information on Nick's side as far as, like, what got him to where...
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, we know more about his backstory.
Yeah, but we don't really know anything about hers.
No.
Yeah.
And... I think that what Nick has achieved has more authentically given him a sense of, like he is himself. And again, that could be part of the whole age thing. But, like, I feel like for Alex, she just wants to get into the school because she wants to feel like she's just as good as these other dancers. But I don't know if the actual experience of going to that school is going to give her the validation that she thinks she's going to get there.
So having watched this for the first time, my sense is that, like, or my interpretation having watched it was that this was largely a vehicle to show a bunch of dance numbers and that it's possible.
Am I going too deep into this?
Possible that we're looking deeper into some of the issues than they perhaps intended. Maybe.
Probably. Although, again, I think that
They had to put conflict. They had to put something to drive, like, some kind of a story forward. But
I think there's some kind of spark there in terms of, like, why Esterhaus even... I mean, look, he's not the one credited with the story. So it was arguably the other screenwriter who originated the idea for this film. But I think that... So I'm sorry to, like, kind of overlook him in this whole process. But there's some spark there in terms of... Because you do have not just Alex, but you have Jeannie, and not just Jeannie and Alex, but you also have Richie, who all have these dreams.
Yeah.
And you see two of the three not be able to achieve it.
They flamed out.
flamed out. And so I think that there is something there. I don't think you're wrong at all. I think absolutely that they took advantage of the popularity of MTV and what they saw, like, some of these films go. Although, like, so Fame precedes this film, but Footloose does not. And
Fame feels very, like, it feels similar in some ways and very, very different in others.
Yeah.
You know? At times it felt like it was more of a documentary that you were watching.
Yes, very much so. It felt way more grounded in, like, what the world's actually like. And it's so funny because, like, again, you have a stand-up comic you know, you don't have an ice skater because that's not what the school's for, but dancers in general. So I guess I just find that really interesting. And that's what I said at the top of the conversation. I'm always really kind of, like, attracted to these stories. And it could just be because of, like, what my own interests are. That, like, it's always interesting to me to watch films where they depict this. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I would be really curious if there had been a sequel to this film to see.
And what happens to this character?
Yeah. Specifically, it's following Alex.
Yeah.
What is the outcome of her going to the school? And does it give her what she thinks she needs?
Well, she is the main character of this movie. So it's. In the movie world, she takes her new exciting style of dance and throws this Pittsburgh ballet school into, like, completely redefining what they call dance.
Well,
and then in reality, in the real world,
she
would try it out for a bit. It wouldn't really fit with what she wanted to do, and she would just move on.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right, because I think that you get maybe just the tiniest hint of that when she's doing her audition dance, because they're all bored, they're not interested, they think it's just going to be same old, and she totally whips them up into a frenzy and gets them super excited because her very unique style of dance. But as exciting as that might have been for them to have witnessed that, they are going to force her into the mold that is the standard for what that school does.
Yep.
Anyway. That's all I'm saying.
Flash dance.
Well, given that this was the first time that you saw it, did you enjoy it? Did it give you anything?
I enjoyed it. For some reason, like, we've talked about this, like, over and over again, but I expected there to be more of, like even Footloose felt like it had more of, like, a underlying story and different, like, different things going on. This was like really just focused on the different, like, set pieces or like dance numbers.
Yeah.
That they had, it felt like that was more of the focus. And then there's also this kind of, like, story moving it from the beginning to the end, which is fine because it's like an hour and a half experience. You're just supposed to kind of, like, enjoy what they're putting out there. So
I don't think Footloose is that long of a movie either, though.
No. I mean, they like, look, the concept in Footloose, we've banned dance in this town, is completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
That kind of, like, adds a little something to it.
But like John Lithgow brings so much groundedness to the set of individuals who have made that decree or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, it on the nose, it does sound ludicrous to have that kind of mandate. But in the world of the film, it kind of makes sense because of just how good he is.
It's wild that the movie with just a completely, like, ridiculous storyline had so much effort put into like explaining it.
Yeah, and it is, like, very moving. Like, yeah, he lost his son. They're grieving. They're still grieving parents. They're kind of overlooking Ariel.
Yeah.
But you are like, as the viewer, given that, whereas in this film, you have to kind of more, like, obviously I'm kind of trying to tease out
exactly
what is being hinted at. Like, even when Alex and Hannah go to that performance, and they're walking back to the taxi, and she asks about, like, oh, does the lead female dancer always get flowers? And Hannah's like, yes. And then she goes, so did you get flowers? And she's like, sometimes. And you kind of get an indication there that even Hannah's career didn't quite turn out.
Mm.
Maybe the way that she, like, either Alex assumes it did, or, you know, so, like, but that's all, like, that's off of a one-word answer.
You know who gets flowers at the end of this movie?
Alex. Oh, Alex does.
She does.
Oh my gosh, Derek, I never even put that together.
Yeah, yeah, at the very end.
Holy cow!
Nick gives her some flowers, right?
And then she gives him one back.
Yeah. So I know they're very different movies, but when I think of Like, I don't really have many other movies to compare it to. But that's, like, the one thing that we had talked about was just, I wish that they had not necessarily made it a longer movie, but just used the time they had a little bit differently so that you are able to get invested a little bit into, like, some kind of a story. But again, I'm, like, talking about the story in Flashdance, so, like, I don't, you know. I don't think that's why people are going to see it.
Yeah, but I think there is more to it. It's like somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
It's not as surface level as I think people would think of it, but it's also lacking a little bit that other films from the same era have given us that are kind of in the same genre.
Yeah. So it's tough because I think there's a sense that it wants to be more than it was. And then the way that like a lot of the dance routines are shot feels... not exploitive, but it's just like, this is what we're like going to show you. We know what you want to see.
Right.
So here you go.
Right.
And then some story.
Call to action.
Call to action.
I don't know what my call to action would. Well, okay. You know what? We've talked about it so much. I'd love to know what people think about the age difference and her being this 18-year-old on her own. Like for the people who have seen the film, did that bother – like, either did it bother you that there is this, like, really crazy age gap between her and Nick? And or were you super curious about, like, how is this 18-year-old so much on her own already in life?
Yeah. I mean, mine is similar. Mine's related a little bit to your call to action, I think. It's just whether – less about the age and more about the working relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, has anyone ever, like, who listens ever – had a relationship with a supervisor where they maybe saw them with an ex, then you threw a brick through their window? You don't have to say your name, but if any, if that's ever happened.
Her name could be his name.
I said yours.
Oh, my name?
What? You don't have to give your name.
Oh, okay. Like, I swear, I've never.
Just give Anna's name.
Anybody's window. It's not my style. So, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can reach out through Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter X. It's the same handle.
Twitter X.
Yep. Same handle for all three. It is at 80s Montage Pod, and 80s is 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sneak peek. In a weird way, kind of a related type of story.
Oh.
It's about dreams and unfulfilled dreams and making it.
Huh. I don't. It's not enough for me. I need something more.
How to remove the curse of, was it a girlfriend or a wife?
How to remove the, what?
I'm trying to throw you off, but also trying to give you clues.
How to remove the curse.
It's like a joke in the film. And candlesticks make a nice wedding gift. Derek,
what
are you kidding me right now?
I'm not.
I'm giving you so much.
Candlesticks make a nice wedding gift.
Yes,
they do.
Yes, and we kept talking about this guy in the background of Flashdance.
Okay,
who is in this movie?
Okay. Oh my God, we're gonna do Bull Durham.
Thank you. Oh my goodness gracious!
Couldn't just say baseball, huh? Would have been too much.
Of course, I couldn't just. Baseball. I'm so excited to cover this one. It's kind of crazy that we haven't yet because this is a film that we both know pretty well, I thought. And
and as of the time of this recording, the Detroit Tigers and Chicago Cubs are both basically like killing it.
They're
doing really
us.
Good. Hey, I'm not jinxing anybody.
Okay.
Yeah. Here, I just knock on wood.
Yeah, if you... that actually was pretty loud.
Yeah.
I heard you knocking on that noggin. yeah, I'm really excited. This is a film that we know so well. This is one of those, like, go-to-bed movies.
Yeah.
So good. Works out well. Start of the baseball season. Mm-hmm. Super fun. It's when everybody is very hopeful for their team. So...
it is the best time of year to be a Detroit Tigers fan.
It's the best time of year to be a baseball fan.
But particularly for a team that you know will have really no hope later on.
Oh, well, we'll see. We'll see how it all turns out.
We'll see. Call to action.
Call to action. Call to action like 6 months from now.
Yeah.
So, Bull Durham coming up. In the meantime, thank you so much to everybody for sticking with us. Out of all the podcast choices that you have, we really appreciate you listening to ours. And we will talk to you again in 2 weeks' time.